Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Effects of the Current U.S. Housing Affairs on Communities of Color conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touchtone phone. Please note this call may be recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Wade Henderson with the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Wade Henderson, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, a coalition of more than 200 national organizations dedicated to building an America as good as its ideals. I appreciate all of you joining us for this important discussion about the future of housing finance reform. Now, I'm honored to be joined today by three distinguished speakers who bring with them extraordinary expertise in the area of housing and economic development, and who have devoted that expertise to helping communities of color recover from the loss of wealth they faced following the 2008 financial crisis. Before I introduce them, I'd like to say a few words about the context for today's event. Now, over the past few weeks, we've heard from several officials in the Obama administration, including Treasury Secretary Jack Lew, who have weighed in on the question of what to do about the mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. As you know, Fannie and Freddie have been under federal conservatorship since 2008, and while their standing has improved, both of them find themselves in a precarious position. They are still in conservatorship, their capital reserves are dwindling by design, and if they face any substantial losses, and last week's report by Freddie Mac that it lost nearly $500 million on financial hedges, which ought to sound the alarm, they will be at risk of further bailouts. Now, the officials in question have flatly rejected the idea of letting Fannie and Freddie regain their financial stability and have said that it is up to Congress to resolve the questions about their future. Unfortunately, these arguments raise more questions than answers. The biggest question is this. Now, which Congress are they talking about? I'll put aside the Senate for a moment because, to its credit, it did try last year to reach a bipartisan consensus on housing reform. But let's look for a moment at the House of Representatives. This is the same House that just pushed out its last speaker, John Boehner, not because of any scandal, but because he wasn't eager enough to shut down the federal government over funding for Planned Parenthood. It is the same House that has held dozens of votes to repeal or defund the Affordable Care Act without bringing forward a single proposal for how to replace it. It is the same House that has failed to act on bipartisan legislation to fix our immigration laws, to restore fairness to our criminal justice system, or to revitalize key parts of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And it is the same House that has insisted on getting the federal government completely out of the nation's housing finance system, even though it can't even bring a bill to the House floor to take such a radical step. Nearly everyone recognizes that this Congress is not taking up GSE reform before 2017. But even beyond that, we are talking about a House that has rigged the game through gerrymandered districts, so you have a lot of House members that are not going anywhere anytime soon. There is no other way to say it. Putting the future of our nation's housing finance system in the hands of this House, while refusing to do what can be done under existing law, shows a level of naivete and a seeming indifference to the consequences of the status quo that is truly disturbing. It will leave Fannie and Freddie as wards of the state for many years to come. And as Mike Calhoun and my other colleagues will explain, the consequences of that may be devastating, not only for the communities of color we represent, but for the entire housing sector of our economy. The officials insisting on congressional action ought to know better than this. Now, while the Senate has shown more interest on acting on a bipartisan basis, its most recent efforts are also troubling. Recently, we have seen legislation introduced that would prohibit the Department of Treasury from selling its shares in the GSEs purchased in the 2008 bailout without congressional approval. Now, we've been told that the goal of this legislation, called the Jumpstart GSE Reform Act, is to increase the pressure on Congress to act on a comprehensive overhaul of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And while in no way do we question the motives of the bill's bipartisan sponsors, after all, in general, it is good for Congress to take up sweeping policy issues. That's what a legislature does. The problem is that this legislature has shown time and time again that it is simply not capable of handling sweeping policy issues and leaving Fannie and Freddie in the brink. While we wait for Congress to act is a recipe for trouble. Now, we should heed the lessons learned in the 2011 budget agreement. It directed Congress to work out a bipartisan deal on taxes and spending that the president could sign. What we got instead was a decade-long sequester that has done more harm than good. The bottom line is this. You can lock committee chairmen and ranking members in a room, but that doesn't make them any more likely to emerge with a bipartisan agreement, and certainly not on this issue where the differences are so drastic. If they could have done it, they would have done it by now. Now, I'd like to make one last point. Administration officials have characterized us as part of a, quote, increasingly noisy chorus, unquote, that is proposing what they call recapitalize and release, or putting the GSEs in the same position they were in prior to the financial crisis. This is simply not accurate. They know that Congress passed reforms in 2008 that improved the oversight of Fannie and Freddie, and the reforms of that law are still not entirely in place. We believe Fannie and Freddie should be recapitalized, to be sure, but they need additional reforms as well, and the administration has the power to do this. Now, obviously, there is a disagreement over the best path to pursue to preserve the American dream for many prospective homeowners who might otherwise be excluded from the current market. After all, disagreements over policy occur all the time. However, attempting to belittle those who disagree with administration policy is really beneath the importance of this issue. Now, with that, I'd like to introduce our speakers. First, we will hear from Jaron Levi, the Director of Policy and Government Affairs at the National Community Reinvestment Coalition. We'll next hear from Hector Sanchez, the Executive Director of the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement. And then finally, we will hear from Mike Calhoun, who is the President of the Center for Responsible Lending. Now, with that, Jaron, why don't we proceed?
Good afternoon, everyone. Jaron Levi here over at NCRC. I bring greetings from our president and CEO, John Taylor. Thank you, Wade. I think Wade has really laid out some of the key concerns and issues confronting Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac at this point in the conservatorship. Yesterday, we here at NCRC released a report called Protecting Duties to Serve and Responsible Next Steps for Reforming the Secondary Mortgage Market. In that white paper, we made a case for the recapitalization and continued reform of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. John Taylor, our president and CEO, said, our dog in this fight are the affirmative obligations included in the charters of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the duties to serve. And I'll just quote what the statute said so everyone on the call understands. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have a, quote, an affirmative obligation to facilitate the financing of affordable housing for low and moderate income families in a manner consistent with their overall public purposes while maintaining a strong financial condition and a reasonable economic return, close quote. We here at NCRC are wedded to that affirmative obligation. We want to ensure that any secondary mortgage market, government-supported entities or facilities have that affirmative obligation enshrined in their core mission. What we're facing at this point, which Wade has laid out, is a state of political and policy uncertainty. Comprehensive housing reform is languishing in the Congress. We see a variety of piecemeal, piece-by-piece measures being taken by FHFA and also being proposed by Chairman Shelby, specifically in the Senate, and just bills pending that really seek to build a piece-by-piece housing finance infrastructure that back us into certain policy conclusions. We're concerned about that. And included in that are the Jumpstart bill that Wade mentioned, but also the constructing of the Common Securitization Platform, the oversight over it. Who other than GSE issuers can access it? We're also concerned or reviewing how risk sharing is being done and the impact that may have on the secondary mortgage market. So really all of these piecemeal measures we have some concern about. We also are concerned about how the interminable conservatorship is lingering on and the political uncertainty it presents. For example, we do not know who the next president will be and what that president's commitment to the affirmative obligations will be. And that introduces political uncertainty. A new president could wind down Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which they are on the track to now, in a way that jettisons the affirmative obligations and the duties to serve. So we feel we've got to put a marker in the ground and say that we're here to protect those because they are critical to how mortgage credit access flows to traditionally underserved markets, minority communities, but really all low and moderate income communities and rural communities. So that's our dog in this fight. That is what we are here to protect, and that is why we have called on this administration in its remaining months on their watch to protect the duties to serve, to recapitalize Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and we go a step further. We want them to end the conservatorship on their watch. So not only recapitalization, you know, putting them on a capital restoration plan, ending the conservatorship, and importantly, as Wade mentioned, we are saying they should build on the reforms of the housing and economic the Housing and Economic Recovery Act, HERA, of 2008. Build on those reforms, which included strong supervision, strong oversight. We're saying build on that. I mean, I would echo Wade's statement that this is not recap and release. You are talking about these entities ending a conservatorship and these entities entering an entirely different banking system. Post Basel III, post the Dodd-Frank Act, post the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and all the various protections it has introduced, post new regulations at the SEC and the CFTC. So this is an entirely different mortgage market. These two entities are entirely differently regulated today than they were prior to the crises, and we are urging this White House, who shares our value. We may have a strategic disagreement today, but they essentially share our values on maintaining home ownership for low and moderate income communities, minority communities across the nation, and the affirmative obligations, the duties to serve, are critical to ensuring that. As a separate matter, I will say, as a supplement, the housing trust funds and the capital magnet funds and the role that those structures will serve in terms of providing additional access are also key, and we also want to see those funded and capitalized. So that's our participation in this fight, and that is what we intend to be emphasizing with our allies on the call over the next 13 months or so of this administration.
Well, Gerard, thank you so much. And actually, during my introduction, I neglected to mention that Gerard is an attorney with nearly 20 years of federal and state government affairs experience. Before her job with NCRC, her background includes being a member of in the Maryland General Assembly. And during her tenure there, the Maryland State Attorneys Association named her Legislator of the Year in 2010. She's also served as the Assistant Director for Legislation for the Legislation Department at the AFL and as a legislative representative for the Laborers International Union. And finally, she worked for U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein, a very varied background indeed. Jerome, thank you so much for being with us. Our next speaker this afternoon is Hector E. Sanchez, who is the Executive Director of LACLA, the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement. He's an indefatigable voice for fighting systemic injustice against Latinos and the most vulnerable communities across the nation. Throughout his career, Hector has worked in labor, human rights, and civil rights, education, and nonprofit organizations. He has led LACLA to a new level of respect within both the labor movement and the social justice movement, and we're thrilled to have Hector with us this afternoon. Hector?
Thank you, Wade, and thanks for all your work on this critical and important issue for all of our communities. LACLA is the leading national organization for Latino workers and their families. We strive to advance the social and economic rights of Latinos in the United States. Thank you for inviting me to this important call on housing finance reform. As you all know, owning a home is one of the key drivers of wealth for Latinos. The housing crisis has impacted Latino families the most. That is the sad reality that our families are facing today. About 67% of Latino wealth is tied to home ownership. But between 2005 and 2009, the household wealth of Latino plummeted by 66%. Let me repeat that because this is very important, 66% because of the housing crisis and alarming rates of foreclosures for Latino families. Latino homeowners were targets of abusive and reckless banking practices. Latino families were more likely to be rejected for conventional mortgage loans and forced to take risky high-priced loans all over the nation. Since the housing crisis, home ownership is at a historic low, especially for Latinos. The home ownership rate for Latinos is at 45%. It's the lowest level of any other groups. As an organization that promotes economic advancement for Latinos, we are extremely concerned about the financial challenges caused by the housing crisis and recession. Millions of Latino families continue to face financial devastation from which many will never fully recover if we don't change lending policies. The lending crisis coupled with decreasing wages for Latinos is creating an alarming saving crisis for Latino families. Let's also remember that Latinos are the most vulnerable workers in the nation. We have some of the highest levels of wage theft, some of the highest levels of death and injuries at work. So when we combine that daily reality with what is happening in the housing market, we can really see what is the current reality of Latinos and what is the future for Latino families and children. It's difficult for Latinos to save or invest when their earnings cannot keep up with the increasing cost of living. Latino families are being forced into the rental market because of tighter loan requirements and standards and limited financial literacy levels. The rental market is becoming just unaffordable for American families. A new study shows that this situation is only going to get worse for Latinos. Latino households paying more than half their income towards rent will rise 25% by 2025. This is more than any other group. We must take steps to make housing affordable for working families all over the nation. This starts by making home ownership a reality again for the most vulnerable workers in the nation, which are Latinos. Reforming the government-sponsored enterprises, the JSEs, like Fannie and Freddie Mac, play a significant role in Latinos accessing affordable mortgages. Latinos cannot continue to be left out of wealth-building opportunities like homeownership. We are central workers for our national economy, and the economic implications of having a majority of Latinos spending more than half of their income in rental market will have serious effects on our nation's economy. We must encourage wealth building for Latinos because they will continue to play a key economic role in the future. Muchas gracias, and I look forward to continue working with all of these great organizations participating on this call.
Thank you so much, Hector. Really appreciate your being with us this afternoon. Our final speaker today is Mike Calhoun, who is president of the Center for Responsible Lending, CRL, which is the policy affiliate of Self-Help, the nation's largest community development lender. Now, for more than 30 years, Mike has been on the front lines of working for more economic justice. At CRL, he provides management and policy leadership. It's based in Washington, D.C. He often testifies in Congress and appears frequently in national media as an expert on financial issues. And prior to joining CRL in 2001, Mike led several lending divisions at Self-Help, providing responsible consumer loans, mortgages, and small business loans, and heading an innovative program to provide national capital for affordable home loans. Mike, it's a real pleasure to have you with us this afternoon, and thanks for participating. You're on.
Thank you, Wade, and thanks to the other participants on the panel. It's an honor to be participating with you. The issue of our nation's housing finance system is one that is incredibly important to all Americans, but much of it is not visible to most families. While families interact with the lender that provides the home buyer mortgage, other entities, including the ones in discussion today, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, provide the money to lenders that makes it possible for them to extend a loan to the family. They do this by buying loans from the lenders, providing the lenders with money they can relend to additional home buyers. Now, the importance of this has been highlighted since the financial crisis. After the financial crash, Fannie and Freddie have provided well over $5 trillion for home loans and funded the majority of all home loans in America. Without their work in this funding, the housing market would still be in shambles. Home values would remain depressed. Most families selling their homes would have no buyers, and we would still be in a much deeper and longer recession. This is one of the common sense reasons why many have rejected the calls to put them out of business and undertake a new, untested system. They provide an essential service. There are three major questions pending regarding the GSEs. One is, what should be the long-term plan for them in our housing finance system? Second, there are immediate proposals to add piecemeal provisions regarding the GSEs to the upcoming budget and debt bills or other must-pass legislation. The third question concerns restrictions on the amount of capital that the GSEs can set aside as a cushion. Let me start first with the so-called rider provisions that would be attached to the budget bill or other bills pending in Congress. As Wade discussed, the first of these is a restriction on the disposition of the stock rights of the GSEs that the government now holds. The government obtained these rights when it provided financial aid to the GSEs in 2008, as it did with other large financial companies that assisted then. With these other companies, the government helped stabilize the companies and then sold its stock, receiving a profit for the government. For the GSEs, there are now proposals to prohibit any disposition of the stock without congressional approval. This was not required in the case of assistance to other companies. As Wade notes, this removes a crucial tool for resolving the GSEs and protecting taxpayers, instead puts it in the hands of a gridlocked Congress. It simply makes no policy or political sense to do this. The second of the proposed policy riders would mandate how the GSEs manage their risk. Today, the GSEs are selling off much of the risk they would otherwise hold on the loans they purchase. This makes the GSEs safer and protects taxpayers. Some seek provisions in these budget riders to steer this business to particular buyers. This would reduce the GSEs' ability to manage a risk, and it would make them less secure. Overall, this policy rider piecemeal approach should be rejected. The next issue, the amount of capital the GSEs may retain, is also pressing. The administration has surprisingly mandated that the GSEs cannot set aside even modest levels of capital. The result of this is to create the risk of accounting-generated artificial crises that make the GSEs appear unstable, even though their loan business is quite safe. They have set aside full reserves for the projected losses on the loans they buy. An artificial paper loss would be triggered by accounting rules that treat similar investments differently when interest rates change, such as occurred recently with Freddie Mac and a reduction in overall market interest rates. Again, this position against accruing capital makes no policy sense, and it unnecessarily exposes taxpayers to the risk of being forced to provide aid to the GSEs. The administration can readily fix this, and the GSEs should immediately be permitted to set aside sufficient capital to prevent these artificial losses. For the longer-term role of the GSEs, as noted by Wade and others, Congress in 2000 passed sweeping reform of the GSEs. Notably, it passed with broad bipartisan support. The GSEs of today are far different from those that operated prior to the 2008 HERA law. Further reforms are still needed to strengthen broad access to all sustainable home buyers and all responsible lenders, to provide and improve fair lending, and to properly structure and incentivize the GSEs. Others have discussed these in more detail today. In summary, the GSEs play a critical role. We've already made major reforms of them to make them safer and more effective, and we need to continue that process and support the housing market and the entire American economy. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate your remarks and the remarks of my other two colleagues who joined us today. Operator, I think we're ready to take some questions. If you would open the line, please.
Certainly. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. We'll pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. And once again, it is star and one to ask a question today.
Operator, I take it means that we have no questions at this point.
We did actually just have a couple of questions come in.
Okay, all right.
We'll go first to Brian Collins from National Mortgage. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. Is there any sense why the White House and Treasury are taking these positions that just leaving Fannie and Freddie kind of dangling in the wind here?
I'll start the ball, and Brian, perhaps others can join in. Look, I think the administration, as you know, is faced with a number of frustrations in this Congress about potentially moving legislation. They wanted comprehensive immigration reform and held out literally for months in the hope that Congress would act. They even attempted to ratchet up enforcement of the immigration laws to demonstrate to Congress that it was serious about enforcing the law. The administration had hoped that Congress would enact a voting rights bill and has urged them to do so in the face of mounting voter irregularities all across the country. You know, and the administration has, as you know, encouraged criminal justice reform and been somewhat reluctant to take unilateral action that it could well do using its executive authority. So I think the administration, understandably, is somewhat reticent about stepping into a policy area where it feels that Congress indeed should take the lead. Having said that, I can't believe that the administration supports the status quo. I think the administration clearly recognizes that the current system is, in the long term, unsustainable, and that the interests of communities that, indeed, they are concerned about, as they are with all American communities, will somehow suffer if there is no adequate intervention. So that's why you're getting the voices of the civil rights community raised out of alarm that we may end up at the end of the president's term without adequate interventions in a housing market left on its own that will not serve the interests that we share in common. And so beyond that, I think it's difficult to fathom why it refuses to act. Now, obviously, the administration believes its position that Congress should really lead. But I think in the face of the comments that I made in my remarks, the likelihood that Congress will act is virtually non-existent. And so for the administration to take that position is de facto reinforcement of the status quo, which I don't think they'd like.
Well,
so that's where we are.
If he wants to recapitalize them, though, they have to start pretty soon, don't they?
Well, I think that's right. I think that's right, although we have not yet reached a point where it would not be feasible to do so, nor would it be unproductive to do so. I don't know if others on the phone want to react to that. Okay.
Mike, as Brian is referencing, the capital standards are minuscule and under provisions of the latest amendment to the preferred share agreement, they quickly are dwindling to zero, where the GSEs will be permitted to have zero retained capital after each of the quarterly sweeps. And there are many ways that this can be resolved in ways that simply avoid an artificial crisis. So one that's been suggested by a number of commenters is that they could do the sweeps based on an annual calculation. That by itself would reduce the likelihood of one of these artificial crises by probably 98% or more, because again, they are being triggered not by any real loss on the lending operations of the GSEs. The GSEs, in fact, including Freddie Mac last quarter, were quite profitable in their lending operations. Rather, it's the fact that when interest rates change, there is a resetting under accounting rules of the value of the hedges that the GSEs appropriately purchase to guard against losses from interest rate risk, but there's not a corresponding change to the value of the mortgages that are being hedged. When those hedges work in the correct way and one moves in one direction and when the other, the value of the mortgages moves in the other, so they cancel each other out in actual value, but in accounting terms, they create these artificial gains and artificial losses that could trigger a draw, further draw from the Treasury line of credit. It's hard to see anything productive coming out of a manufactured crisis resulting from those draws.
Thank you.
I think, Brian, a couple of things. I mean, to be fair to the administration, I think they are, you know, they would prefer, obviously, Congress to act. And because, you know, it's almost like, you know, the perfect competing with the good. I've always said, you know, you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And the fact is we have a very good system, but there are things that could be perfected. Clearly the corporate governance structure of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac is still an issue of contention. You know, the issues around risk to the taxpayers, the risk to the taxpayer, There may be ways to shore up the system in that way. I think they are looking at liquidity and in the secondary mortgage market and whether you need an explicit guarantee to have that. They may be concerned about political risk. You know, there are a number of things I think they are weighing. We may disagree strategically over whether some of those concerns are overblown. But I still think they share our value about home ownership for traditionally preserving access to mortgage credit and preserving home ownership for traditionally underserved markets. I will say also on your second piece, whether they have to start to recapitalize very soon. I think it would be optimal to start to recapitalize very soon, but I also think they can put Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac on a capital restoration plan. They can recapitalize to a certain level and then put them on a longer-term capital restoration plan that may last for a far longer period that may actually transcend, you know, the ending of the conservatorship. So there are a number of ways in which you can shore up the buffer of the entities and their financial integrity.
Thanks, Jerron. And Brian, thank you for your question. Operator, we'll take the next question, please.
Certainly. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. We'll move next to Cheyenne Hopkins from Bloomberg. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for having the call. I wanted to ask on, I realize this conservatorship indefinitely is not ideal, but why, what is the benefit of, would you get out of releasing and recapitalizing them as opposed, what could you do on that as opposed to keeping them in conservatorship? I mean, how does it help low income more than how they're helped now? Right now it seems like the only clear beneficiary of a recap release as opposed to the current system are some hedge funds.
Well, Cheyenne, that's a great question. I'm going to ask Mike to start in response, and if I need to add to it, I will. Mike?
So first, and I think this goes back immediately to the artificial loss and the risk of a draw against the Treasury. So one of the things that you have seen is this lack of ability to have any cushion, capital cushion whatsoever, has been a major factor in driving the GSEs to be overly conservative in their lending. They are currently, in effect, restricting access to their loans to the narrowest credit box that we have seen in decades. And that's driven a lot by the fact that the business folks are worried that if they had any losses in a turndown, that would create a draw because they wouldn't have any capital to absorb higher levels of losses than those that they have projected. And so it's having an immediate effect on stifling the whole mortgage market. Lori Goodman at the Urban Institute has estimated that if we just had normal credit availability, we would see 1 million more home purchase loans each year. And that would have a profound effect on the housing industry, which is close to 20% of the economy, and would provide a significant boost to the whole economy. And the other part of this is this situation is getting aggravated in that demographics are changing. The majority of growth in new households will come from families of color who come into the system with less wealth than other home buyers, and they are being excluded from this market. The most recent GSE numbers were less than 3%, for example, of all their home purchase loans in the last couple of years went to African-American home buyers. And if this new block of home buyers, who will be the majority of new home buyers, are not served, that blocks up the whole pipeline of people buying a first home, people selling a first home and moving to a second home, people when they retire selling their home to someone. and it is increasingly handicapping the whole U.S. economy. So while this is unfortunately the kind of situation where it is getting progressively worse as time goes on. Now, we're hoping that the GSEs under Director Watt are starting to make some significant changes there. But as long as they are in this in-between land of conservatorship, it's hard for them to do rational business planning, and we all pay a price for that.
Cheyenne, is that okay? I think we'll move to the next question, operator. Thank you.
And we have no further questions at this time. I would like to turn it back to you, Mr. Henderson, for any closing remarks today.
Well, thank you so much, operator. Ladies and gentlemen, again, I want to thank our colleagues for participating today, Jerron Levi, Hector Sanchez, and Mike Calhoun. And I'm Wade Henderson, by the way, with the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. And we hope that this briefing has been useful in helping you understand why those in the civil and human rights community and those in the consumer advocacy community are really deeply concerned about the failure to move forward in trying to remove Fannie and Freddie from conservatorship, with the understanding that additional reforms beyond those already undertaken would be applied. We think that's an essential element in helping to restore the vitality of the housing market for those that we serve. So with no further ado, let me thank our colleagues for participating, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today. Operator, thank you.
Thank you. This does conclude today's program. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at any time.